We have about $500 million in holdings in our portfolio. That varies from 300 single family homes all over the country. All of those were purchased with Creative Finance. 100% of them are purchased with Creative Finance, meaning I didn't use any credit, no credentials, no W-2, no tax returns. Nobody used their credit, no banks whatsoever, and very little money. And when we do use money, it's somebody else's.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
Today on the show, I have the pleasure of chatting with one of, if not the biggest guys in creative real estate financing space. I'm chatting with none other than Mr. Pace Morby. G'day, Pace. Welcome to the show. How you doing today, mate?
Reid, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Mate, thank you very much. I am doing really, really well. We like to start all these episodes with the first question. Rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid.
My first dollar came from my father giving me work to do. My father was a blue collar guy, contractor, had 12 children. My mom and dad married still to this day. I think that's also one of my big jumpstart propellants that really made me successful, is watching kind of traditional values. And my parents taught me how to work really hard. My dad, when I wanted 20 bucks or 10 bucks or go down to the gas station and get penny candies, my dad would say, no problem, let's paint the fascia on Saturday and I'll give you 20 bucks. Okay, hey, let's do this, let's do that. And so I would do things around the house. And then when I turned 8, my dad started taking me on his job sites on Saturdays and I would earn $20 a week. So this was like $2 an hour probably is what my dad was paying me back then. But that was my relationship with money, was exchanging my time for money.
I grew up with the same, not with 12 people, but I grew up with two high school teachers, and same thing, you know, secondhand cars, had to work for your money. I remember being 13 and a half years of age in Australia. That's the legal age you can go and start working, tearing off a newspaper and writing my
parents' number. Did you say 13 and a half?
13 and a half in Australia.
That's great.
The legal age, like you can like get a little part-time job. And I remember going to the local cafe store and just ripping off a piece of paper with my parents' number on it, saying, hey, what do you need help with? And I remember getting $6 an hour at a little cafe. But it's that relationship with money that then propels you into wanting more. And not that I was poor or anything, but we didn't come from a lot of means, probably like yourself. But, you know, mum and dad still work until this day. And it's just, it's a great way to have a relationship with money growing up. Kudos to your mum and dad.
Yeah, same to yours, brother. I think it's really great. But then when you get into your 20s, this is where it became problematic. I was so ingrained into believing that I had to be there to make the money that I spent all of my 20s exchanging time for money.
What'd you do?
I turned into a contractor. I turned into a guy that developed homes and, you know, Opendoor, Offerpad, Zillow, the big three home buyers. Zillow stopped buying homes a couple of years ago because they got their butts kicked, but I was their contractor. So I built big crews, I had 250 people, and I was doing everything myself, scheduling, bidding, invoicing, doing everything, because I never learned delegation. I never learned leadership. I never learned any of these things. What I learned from my mom and dad was work your ass off. And I remember calling my dad when I was like 24, making great money. I told my dad, I said, hey, I want to make more money. And my dad's only answer was, well, then you got to work more. Literally at 24. And I go, Dad, I'm working 6 days a week. And he says, well, sometimes you got to work 7 and play catch up. And when I heard my dad say that to me at 24, I was finally old enough and wise enough to realize that that was actually really bad advice. So I started reading more books. I started paying attention to what other people were doing. And I started finding mentors that were not my parents. I think there was a point where I should have done that at probably 19, 20. And the blueprint for success for finances, career, marriage, family, all of that stuff was put in me from my parents. And the reality is I don't want anything that my mom and dad have. I mean, I love my mom and dad. They have a great marriage and everything, but you know, they're from the old school age where like, if you're in a fight, you don't talk about it and you just let things, you sweep things under the rug. My dad's still at 65, 67, doing all the work himself. So that was the blueprint that was given to me, and it got me out of Egypt. right? Saying yes to all these things got me out of Egypt, but it wasn't going to get me to the promised land. The thing that was going to get me to the promised land was delegation and leverage, but that's something that still to this day, my dad still does not understand. So I had to pivot and find new people. And what I really needed, I'm so grateful for, is I had a guy that came into my world that basically scolded me and told me I was doing everything wrong. His name is John Bohm. He's now the head mindset coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And I was paying him $500 an hour to meet me in a Starbucks. And this guy was so good, Reed. Here's what he would do. He'd pull out your phone. We're spending this hour not talking. We're spending this hour doing. And he would force me to delegate and hire and do all these things. Pull out your phone. You need to delegate that off your plate. I'm like, I don't have an employee for it. He goes, great. Ask one of your siblings to do it. Ask one of your friends to do it. Do anything but you needs, anybody but you needs to do this thing. And this was the beginning of my journey. And now today, here we are, 600 and some odd employees, 9 different businesses doing $120 million a year in revenue. And I get to work from home and I don't have to go to the offices where all the people are. And I've got great partners. And it all came from somebody teaching me delegation and leverage.
Interesting what I was just going to say about the blueprint. It's so funny that we put our parents on a pedestal, right? And I'm sure at 24, it came crashing down for you in a reality that you had to probably deal with. A lot of us, you know, having to deal with it. Our parents are just humans, right? As much as we grow up with them being on our pedestal, and particularly your family, you know, your dad, it seems like he had such an ingrained sense of belief in what you were doing. And, you know, he's made you into the man he is today. But then that realization that I need to think differently, otherwise I'm going to end up like him. And it's not a diss to him. It's not a slight on him. It's just thinking differently
I think it's paying respects. Like, think about this. My grandfather worked at the power plant in the day. And then he had two jobs at night. One, he was doing delivery, and the other one, he was doing accounting, bookkeeping while he was waiting for his next delivery. So he had three jobs, right? This guy's working 16 hours a day. And that was my dad's blueprint. And so my dad having two jobs was my dad honoring his father and saying, right, I'm going to do it a little bit better. Right. And so really what I had to do was break that mold and go, I'm going to pay you respect, and I'm going to honor you and how hard you worked, and I'm going to let you know that I'm going to be better off, and I'll do the same thing for my children. Is I'm not going to make them work any less. My kids are going to work their asses off. They're going to complain, and they do. My kids do complain, and they should. I complained when I was a kid too. But the one thing I teach my kids now is delegation and collaboration with other kids. And you know, my son Ashley, 16 now, finds real estate deals, and he'll go and find real estate deals with his friends so that he learns collaboration and delegation and team building and all those things, which is something I wasn't learning at that age. So I think it's paying respect to your parents is an obligation.
100%. I think you said that better than I could have said it. So let's transition to your 600 employees, what you've built today. What does the business look like in the Pace Morby world?
We are primarily a real estate acquisition business. So we are a buy and hold business. We have about $500 million in holdings in our portfolio. That varies from 300 single family homes all over the country. All of those were purchased with creative finance. 100% of them are purchased with creative finance, meaning I didn't use any credit, no credentials, no W-2, no tax returns. Nobody used their credit, no banks whatsoever, and very little money. And when we do use money, it's somebody else's. And that's 300 single family homes. We've got another 1,500 multifamily doors that are, again, big assets. Like my biggest asset's a 587 unit deal in Houston, Texas. We acquired for $110 million, no money out of pocket, no credit check, nothing. Bunch of smaller, you know, properties in between all of that. And then we have RV parks, mobile home parks, et cetera. And now the last couple of years, we've been acquiring businesses, cash flowing businesses with creative finance as well. Like we just bought, if you guys are listening to this, go look up The Plant Guy on Instagram, a guy that's doing about $6 million a year in revenue, but he got to a point where he couldn't scale past himself, right? The delegation, the team building and all of that stuff. And he's like, I can't get past $6 million on my own. So we came in, consulted for equity, took 50% of the business, and now the company will go to 12 million and then 20 million and then 30 million. And so just acquiring, just putting stuff in the portfolio. I used to fix and flip a lot. I used to do a lot of wholesale a lot to get transactional income coming in. But, you know, you fix and flip a house, let's say 5 years ago, you drive by it today and you're like, why did I ever sell that thing? It's worth twice as much as what I sold it for. And I thought I scored on that deal, but it, you know, for the 50 grand I made on the deal, I could have made $500,000 by just holding the property and cash flowing between the time. So we phased into the world of 99% of what we do now is just build our portfolio and hire people to manage that. And that's most of what I do. I also own virtual assistant companies, and we own a lending business that makes millions of dollars a year as well. And so anything that has to do with real estate, I do it. We own title and escrow, we own lending, we own a brokerage, we own all that kind of stuff. But 99% of what I wake up and think about is, what am I going to acquire and put in my portfolio today?
I think it's actually an interesting topic. We actually launched now at RSM Property Group our first debt fund. We're historically a multifamily operator, have always been that. We're starting to see, obviously, as the last 12 to 18 months, sale volume has completely fallen off a cliff, right? And you got to pivot. So I think that's an interesting, you know, through line. How have you handled as you've evolved and you're raising the money and being the expert in so many different pools? I understand it's real estate backed, but how do you, you know, have the mindset to know that you can go off and do it successfully and not, excuse my language, fuck it up, you know, when you got so many things, you know, pots on the stove all cooking at once?
What a great question. We could talk about that for hours. I think a big part of it is that I don't know that. I don't know that I'm not going to screw it up. I don't know that things aren't going to be perfect, but I do know one thing for sure, that no matter what happens, my birthday is still going to happen next year. My wife's still going to have sex with me. the things that I actually care about are always going to continue to happen. So I have to go out and I have to. Everything we've ever done, everything you've been proud of in your life, you have gone through some bullshit to become a better person, to ultimately accomplish that thing. So if that's the equation 100% of the time, then there's just fires you have to walk through. So when raising money, you know, I remember probably 10 years ago when I first raised my first dollar, it was $30,000. My first amount of money I raised was $30,000. And it seemed like billions of dollars at the time, right? Because it's a stressful situation. But again, there's another equation there. Like everything you do the first time, you're going to be stressed out about it. It's like the first time you go on a podcast or speak on a stage or make a YouTube video and you're looking at the likes and the comments and, oh my gosh, what do people think about that? Then one day you just don't even look at anything and you just keep cranking and it becomes a habit. When I raised my first $30,000, it was for a single family house. I bought it for $500,000. And because I buy everything with Creative Finance, I just took over this seller's mortgage. No credit check, none of that stuff, which was great. But the seller wanted $5,000. The agent wanted some money and I had closing costs and a little bit of paint and whatever. So I needed $30,000. So I go to this girl, her name's Sonia, and I met her at a real estate meetup. So there's a tip for people that want to learn how to raise more money. I'll give you also a really amazing tip that I figured out about 5 years ago. It's like the most gangster, unbelievable way to raise money that is truly not like some ominous secret. But when I tell you, it will be almost deflating of like, wow, that is so true how easy it is to raise money. I'll tell you that in a second. But I raised the $30,000 from Sonia. I turned this into a cash flowing Airbnb. It starts making like $2,500 a month net. We have 75. I don't buy any of those anymore, but we have 75. And they make like net maybe $1,000 a month, like across the board. Some are like $500. You know, there's seasonalities and all this kind of stuff. So it's about $1,000. But this one is making me $2,500 a month net. What I did is instead of me taking the $2,500 and living on it, I took that $2,500 and just saved it up to the $30,000. And I paid Sonia off at the end of the year, plus her interest and all that stuff. Such an interesting conversation. Here's what happened, Reed. So she goes, I go, hey, I'm going to wire you the money. I know our agreement was a 3-year agreement, but I'm just wiring the money to you. And she's like, I don't want the money back. I want the monthly interest. Like, I don't want the money back. And I'm like, wow, what a paradigm shift. And the reality is every paradigm shift that we all need in life is on the other side of the bullshit that you are avoiding, right? There was a quote I heard the other day, which was, the magic you're looking for is in the work you're avoiding. And I'm sitting there avoiding raising capital because I'm afraid of this and afraid of that. And then I have these amazing paradigm shifts when a lender says, I don't want my money back. I just thought the whole time these people want their money back. Of course, they want a return and they want to know their principal is safe, but they don't want the money back because now they have to find another place to deploy it that's safe and secured with real estate. Oh my gosh, when I learned that, I'm like, oh, I should be buying more and finding more private money lenders. So I called Sonia and I said, can you tell me what's the mindset you have as a lender? She goes, Pace, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Now, I'm not talking about accredited investors going into a fund. I'm talking about private money lenders going into like a single family deal that's like a short-term loan, right? Completely different conversation. And she says, Pace, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And I want my 401k making money for me, and you're giving me a 12% return on my money. I can't find that anywhere else. Like, this is a godsend for me and my family. I give you $30,000, you pay me $300 a month. That pays for our cell phone, or that pays for our grocery bill, or that pays for whatever. I'm like, gosh, damn, like these lenders actually are benefiting from me. I should be doing this more. And I started becoming more and more friends with my lenders, and they all hang out with me and we go to dinners and dates. And I'm like, now realize that my lender shouldn't have been this like scary person I thought that was at a country club smoking a pipe, wearing a suit. It's like a stay-at-home mom or a traveling nurse or an accountant that doesn't have the time to find their own deals that needs some passive income. So, you know, that compounds. But here's a tip for your audience. It's like, how do I raise money? Guys, in America, this is one of the best things about America, something called public records. So all you have to do is go down to your county recorder's office and tell your county recorder. Every county has this, by the way. This is not just Arizona. This is nationwide. We do deals in not every state, but I'm in like 30 states. Every single county has a county recorder. You go to the county recorder in person, Google it, type in Alaska County Recorder, Texas County Recorder. Go down there, go to their office, wait in line. There's probably two people in front of you. Go to them and say, I'd like to get every lender that has given a loan, a private loan on a single family or a multifamily, whatever you're looking for. If you want somebody that's doing deals for multifamily and doing gap funding or lending or whatever else, the county recorder will give you every loan that has ever been put in first position, second position, third position, fourth position. So you know how willing these people are to be in second position or third position. You know how much they're deploying. You know their company name. You know their personal name. You know how long they're willing to do the loans. It's all public data. And when I found that out 5 years ago, I hired a full-time person just to call those people and go, hey, Tom, I see that you loaned on 123 Main Street. Are you looking for similar loans like that? We've got some deals in the pipeline. We're looking for some lenders. We'd love to build a relationship with you. Boom. I don't need to call my friends and family. I don't need to call anybody. The public records are showing you nationwide. There was 14 million private loans placed last year. There's plenty of lenders all over the country. You don't need to go to your personal phone. Now, can you go to your personal phone? Yes. But dude, you learn these things and it becomes addictive and you get this momentum. And now it's not even about getting rich. It's just about becoming a smarter person and playing the game every step of the way.
I love it. Love it. I'm actually going to tell my head of acquisitions to go to the, now we launched the debt fund, go to the public county records and get everyone who's been lenders on small deals.
You can do it all online. Mostly you can do it all online, but what is great is the county recorder has their own little search feature. They can just filter it way faster. And if you pay, I paid the lady 5 years ago, I paid her $7. And for $7, they'll give you unlimited records as far back as you want. And I was like, okay. And then I guess got too many. Then I realized, I'm like, no, I just want the people from the last 12 months, the people who are active, because we were calling people from 3, 4, 5 years ago. And they're like, I'm not lending anymore. I'm retired, this, that, and the other. So we just found people. We told them, filter people that have given loans over $50,000 that are willing to go in second lien position, that are under 10% note. Their promissory note is under 10% interest only. And I want all those people. It's thousands of people just in the last 6 months. I'm like, why does nobody talk about this?
That's awesome.
It's not in any Raising Capital book. It's not in any Raising Capital webinar or anything I've ever watched. And the only way you learn that crap is to walk through the fire that you're avoiding of like just doing the thing, you know?
It seems to me like you have had a big transition in your mindset, which has helped go from that builder, right? There's obviously clearly an underlying tone here that you're just a workhorse, right? You're going to fucking figure it out and, you know, gritting it. But that mindset, so who is in your wheelhouse today? Just curious, that helps you be Pace Morby today.
Oh my gosh. Like support team?
Yeah. Well, not even a support team. I'm talking about like mentors. Or okay. You know, people who are at that high echelon that help you be who you are. Because I think that's a very interesting thing.
I have a mentor I paid $25,000 a month to build a great relationship with him. He sold the company for $1 billion 4 years ago. He has $750 million in real estate. He does not do mentorships, but I believe in mentorships because I realized I was the anti-mentorship guy. I'm a blue collar guy. Like somebody, if somebody told me I had to pay for education, I'm like, I'll go to college. Like literally that's how bad my mindset was. Like, go to college if I'm going to pay for education. That's so stupid, right? Yeah, that's dumb because the reality is like Bobby Castro sold the company for $1.1 billion. You guys can find him on Instagram. He's gangster. He owns $750 million in real estate without partners, without a fund, without anything. He had a lending business. He was making net in his pocket every year, $20 million. His brother, who's his partner, was making $20 million a year too. $40 million a year take home. That's the guy I'm listening to. And not only that, he's got a beautiful family, beautiful wife. He had a come up story very similar to you know, all of us really. He started with nothing. He was a waiter in Miami, Florida, meets his girlfriend, Sophia, gets her pregnant before they're married, has a shotgun wedding, 15 years later, sells a business for $1.1 billion.
That's so insane.
Right. And so I look at those guys and I'm like, I need to know, what do you know? And what am I doing wrong? And so he'll, you know, if you look at me as like a rock, his job is kind of smooth out the edges and figure me out and go, okay, you are this stone. You're this amazing stone, but you got a lot of rough edges. Let me figure this out. So enterprise value is one of the things that he really put into my mind the last year. Enterprise value, which is you're building all these companies, you're doing all these things, but who would be willing to buy you? Is there a company out there that's willing to buy you? And he says, you need to build your business as if you're going to sell it. And I'm like, well, I don't want to sell it. And he goes, okay, you don't want to sell it because you're 40. But when you're 46 years old, you're going to wake up and go, I just want to, you know, work out 2 hours a day, be with my kids, go fly around the country and do whatever the hell I want to do. And you're going to go, why didn't I build my business to sell it? So I get coached by him a couple hours a month. I've got another guy named Myron Golden. I pay him $55,000 a year. Myron Golden teaches me how to speak and be a better communicator because it's the greatest skill on planet Earth, how to tell stories. Now, I'm already a great storyteller. I'm already a great communicator, but I want to be like one of the best, right? Dean Graziosi, I spent a lot of time with Dean Graziosi, spent some time with Tony Robbins on a yearly basis. Dean is a friend of mine. I've never paid Dean, but I do stuff with Dean. We collaborate. And then I have a lot of people in my specific industry, in the real estate industry, like Ken McElroy. I really look up to Ken McElroy, who manages all of Robert Kiyosaki's assets, lives right up the road. So these are relationships I didn't start my life with. I had to earn these relationships by grinding my ass off so consistently that the only thing people noticed about me wasn't that I'm rich, I wear a Rolex, I drive a fancy car. The people noticed things about me is like, this guy effing shows up every day for years and years and years and years and years, and he's not going anywhere. I'm willing to invest in a relationship in that person. Because Reed, you know this, you've probably had people that spot up and they want to get your attention. And then 3 months later, they're not even in any sort of industry. It's like, no, dude, I want to be with the people that have been in the industry for a long time. I think I've deserved that. So Grant Cardone, another good friend of mine, just hung out with him a couple of days ago. Brandon Dawson, Jared Glant, you know, being able to voice memo these people. I'm texting Alex Hormozi this morning, just back and forth about transporting my community from Facebook and Kajabi over to a different place and doing. It's like, if you are not at a level I'd be willing to trade my life for, I just can't listen to your advice. Because yep. I did that for 24 years, right? I listened to the wrong advice for 24 years. It then took me 10 years to basically, I tell people, you take bad advice, you get a bad blueprint. You can't just build the new blueprint on top of that old blueprint. You have to demo it first and demolish everything you thought you knew, and then you can rebuild. And so from 24 to 30, I had to demo everything I thought I knew. And then from 30 to 40, I've now had to rebuild. And then on top of it, the people that help me be who I am, I have 14 people every day that I delegate to. They're all women because I just do better with women. And they are all executives in whatever company. And I have partners that are men. I have women that are my partners as well. But when I delegate, I can't delegate to a man. It's just something with my personality. I have a hard time like dealing with the ego of two men in the same room. And so I love having the support of a nurturing, amazing woman that's like, whatever we, you know, women are very much we oriented, men are very me oriented. And so when I'm trying to build something, I need a lot more we minded people, which are typically women. And so people ask, how do you do all this stuff? How are you everywhere? I'm like, it's these powerful women that allow me to do everything that I do. So
that's awesome.
There's the sandwich. The top of the people I listen to and the people that are underneath me supporting the team are just amazing as well.
That's incredible. Thank you for sharing. As we look to round out the show, I wanted to get your two cents on, we've come through a bit of a rocky couple of years with higher interest rates. I know you're in the creatives financing world and we didn't even scratch that surface. I could talk to you for hours about that. But what are you seeing coming into 2024 and beyond with the business, the changing in the economy and all that sort of good stuff?
All I know is it's going to be a lot of bullshit. It's always a lot of bullshit every year, right? Every year there's some bullshit that disrupts. There's always some sort of disrupting thing. AI, honestly, I'm legitimately scared of AI in so many ways. I'm sure everybody can kind of resonate with that thought. But here's the thing about real estate. You and I both know. It doesn't matter what's happening this year, last year, 5 years ago in real estate. If you can A, find good deals, B, structure the debt properly, it doesn't matter what's going on in the market, because I'm not buying for next month's paycheck. I'm buying for 10-year legacy, right? And so when you look at it that way, all you're doing is going, all right, I'm buying in areas where the population is growing, where jobs are coming into. And if I buy, even if I pay retail, right? I pay retail for on a lot of my assets, but I'm getting a lot of zero down, 0% interest, or zero down, 3% interest seller finance deals, or taking over people's existing debt. So one, I'm not really worried about interest rates. Two, I also am not really worried about what's going on in the market, except for the local markets. And I just go to the Census Bureau. Guys, Census Bureau's website is one of the greatest things that you should, your acquisition team, your people should be on the Census Bureau an hour a week. And they should be looking at the markets that are growing. If you have a growth of 0.08% year over every single year, that is a market that rents will double every 3 to 4 years. It's a market that your property values will go up and double every 15 years. Like, just buy and hold, right? And if you guys are doing a debt fund, your acquisition team is like, we're just acquiring deals in a few spaces, just go to the Census Bureau and go, I'm focusing on those. I don't care about anything else. So I know that politicians are going to do all their bullshit this year. I am fearful of the fact that the only thing our politicians ever talk about is gay rights. It's like, guys, let everybody get married to everybody. Who gives a shit? We got to save the country is hemorrhaging capital all over the place. You got my immigration stuff going on. Focus on what needs to be focused on, and they won't. So I realized, like, I'm not going to control any of that. The only thing I can control is me, myself, and I, and I'm going to get my team to win. And what I look at is all these waves of what goes on in the economy, waves of politicians, waves of all the bullshit, waves of the news, waves of the rhetoric. And I just go, hey guys, let's get a surfboard and just ride all these waves and make a ton of money off of it. Because instead of me trying to stop or pivot or whatever, I'm just going to ride the wave. Now, AI, bro, as far as real estate goes, have you seen Ready Player One?
No. Okay. I have.
It's movie, that right? Movie where the guy I truly believe that in 10 to 15 years, we will be in some sort of world that it won't be that in 15 years, but we will be entering into the obvious arena of like, oh my gosh, guys, we are definitely headed to people living only in mobile homes and only these tiny little shacks and only these little things. And people are going to be sucked into the other world, which is technology and all the other things. And you've got men falling in love with, you know, AI women and all, and they know, they know it's an AI woman. Okay, cool. I love it. I support it. It's crazy. But I look at it from a real estate aspect and I'm like, okay, my properties that are like 3-bed, 2-baths, 4-bed, 3-baths, 5-bed, 4-baths, whatever. I've got some larger homes. I look at those and I go, I think I'm gonna have to pivot those exit strategies. I think I'm gonna have to either A, sell them before, you know, these houses continue to get smaller and smaller. You look at what's going on in Austin and what's going on in San Antonio right now. It's like people are, you've got a full house with a yard, your living room, kitchen, master bedroom, bathroom, and everything is all in, like, it's just a little shoebox. And they're selling these things for like $350,000. And I look at that and I go, in 10 years, that's basically the only type of house that's going to be getting built. And I think a lot of these larger homes are going to have to either A, I have to get them out of my portfolio, or B, I chop them up and I turn them into like a fourplex or whatever. Like something that's happened recently in California, something that's happened just in Arizona, is now the legislation comes out and goes, hey, just so you guys know, you can all build ADUs in your backyards now. You can all build these things. I'm like, okay, damn. Like, this is what's going to happen to America, is that smaller houses, closer together, ADUs, a lot more apartment complexes, and we're going to turn into a country of renting. And I also think that in 25 years, I think we're going to be on universal basic income. When I'm 70 years old or 65 years old, when I'm Grant Cardone's age, I think 30-40% of the population in America will be on a universal basic income, which is scary.
It's scary, but it's inevitable because the population is growing, right?
So what do you do?
We're getting smarter.
Right. So like as a buy and holder, right? Like you and I, as a buy and holder, I'm buying my assets for the long haul. It's like, oh shit. Like, how do I know I'm buying something that people are actually going to use. It's definitely not larger homes. Like these larger single family homes, I think I got to get rid of those out of my portfolio. I've got a lot of big mansions we've turned into Airbnbs. I'm like, oh damn, even though they're cash flowing right now, I'm going to wait for the next run up in the market, which I think possibly could be this year with interest rates going down. I think we'll get a 15% bump on all the real estate over the next 18 months if they truly do lower interest rates. If Trump takes office, I don't know what will happen. But I think that the market will run up and we'll get a 15% bump in all real estate. I think it's going to be even way harder for people to buy real estate. And I think they're going to have to raise the rates again. And it's going to be this little cycle of like messing with the consumer. So again, just get your surfboards out, everybody, because we got to catch some waves.
That's awesome, my friend. Dude, I can talk to you for hours and I'd love to spend some time with you in person. But for the listeners, where can people go to be in your sphere? They want to just check you out. They want to check out some of the mentorship stuff. Where do they go?
Just go to my YouTube channel. We've got 2,400 videos over there. I spend probably 6 hours a week really being passionate about making sure that whatever's going on in my world, I show you deal breakdown. So if I buy a deal, which we buy probably 3 or 4 rentals a week, if I'm buying a deal, it goes on the YouTube channel. I give you the address. I give you the settlement statements in the description down below. I also walk through the whole deal. Here's the phone call. Here's the second thing that happened. Here's the third thing that happened. And I don't get, we're in the top 0.1 percentile of YouTube channels. We're at 270,000 subscribers. We're like top of the food chain. But my channel is never going to hit 1 million subscribers. It's too much of a niche. It's creative finance real estate. It's never going to hit 1 million subscribers. So guys, go over there and just watch my deal breakdowns and you'll have these epiphanies of like, oh my gosh, I can go buy anything I want without money, without credit, and without a W-2 or any tax returns.
Well, mate, I want to thank you so much for jumping on today's show. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think that, you know, the story around your family is insane. Like 12, I can't even fathom having 12 siblings.
Me neither, dude. I don't know how my parents did it, honestly.
But I think it's so key about your blueprint, how as the family unit creates the blueprint, but it's okay in the future to go and change that blueprint, ripping it down, starting it again, and being okay and humble enough to say like, I need to let that go. I need to let that pedestal go. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show, including myself, have to let go of that with your parents as you get to a certain age. But then also creating the just some of those people that you mentioned earlier around you to change your mindset helps you become that better surfer, right? I'm actually a surfer. The reason I live in Los Angeles is because I love freaking surfing, you know, every week. But I think that is so important. And you know, we didn't even touch on the creative financing stuff, but definitely go check out everything that you're doing. And just love you for giving some time out of your day to jump on this show today. Thanks again for jumping on the show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very
soon. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Pace Morby. Go check him out. Just Google his name, PaceMorby, and just check everything he's doing out on YouTube. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ. That's what we do on this show. If you love this show, the easiest way to give back is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes. And we're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.